Hi, I'm Jen White, and this is the 1A Podcast. You may have been one of many who found themselves glued to a screen watching Amazon's Lula Rich documentary. The series uncovers the rise and decline of the multi-level marketing clothing business, LuLaRoe.
I had achieved the dream. I was selling magic leggings.
This is a huge opportunity in America.
Women were selling breast milk so they could afford startup costs.
It had just become a circus.
Mark starts spouting off passages from the Book of Mormon.
A mass delusion.
Oh my God, I'm in a cult.
The documentary exposes the inner workings of multi-level marketing companies, or MLMs. These companies recruit contractors to both sell their products and to bring in more independent contractors. The more people a contractor brings into the company, the more money they stand to gain. LuLaRoe is one of countless MLMs operating in the U.S., and while they're legal, one estimate says only 25% of people in them turn a profit. The Federal Trade Commission has even said that some MLMs are indeed pyramid schemes. So today, we take a deep dive into the business of MLMs, and we talk to people who were once in them. Joining us today are Robert L. Fitzpatrick, author of Ponzinomics, The Untold Story of Multi-Level Marketing. He's also president of Pyramid Scheme Alert, that's an international association that works to expose and prevent pyramid scheme fraud. Also with us today, Roberta Blevins, former LuLaRoe consultant and the host of the Life After MLM podcast, and Josie Nikoy. She's the creator of the Not the Good Girl YouTube channel and a former top MLM distributor. And we did reach out to LuLaRoe for their response to the documentary, but did not hear back in time for this broadcast. Robert, let's start with some definitions. What is multi-level marketing, and what are the hallmarks of an MLM?
Well, that's the question most people don't address. They just get in them and they're solicited. Essentially, they're all have four major characteristics. They're all based, they present themselves as sales companies, but they are based on the endless chain. That is, what they're most famous for is recruiting. You recruit one person who recruits another person, so you have this long genealogical chain of distributors, so-called distributors. And that becomes the basis for MLM's hallmark promise of an unlimited income. You have to pay to get into it. There's an entry fee. You normally have to buy products monthly or in order to stay qualified. You have to recruit if you're really going to make money. That's the people who make money, recruit. And then there's a mechanism, a formula, a pay plan formula that transfers money from that long genealogy of recruits up to the persons at the top. Those four characteristics define what multi, and all of them have those same four characteristics.
Now, pyramid schemes are illegal in the U.S. In theory, how would an MLM operate differently from a pyramid scheme?
Well, in theory, and there is no law in the United States, there's no national law that defines the pyramid scheme or outlaws them. So, effectively, what operates here are case laws. There are various cases. And under these case laws, the trade regulators have sort of constructed a theory or theoretical model in which an endless chain operation could be legal. And so these include the majority of the money coming in the door and on which these bonuses or money transfers occur come from retail sales, not from the purchases of the individual so-called distributors or participants themselves, that there's some mechanism for buying back if someone wants to get out or discovers they don't want to be in it anymore or they feel they've been harmed. And third, some disclosure occurring in which people really do understand what the odds are, what the mechanism is, how they would make money, how many have ever made money or not made money. If there's adequate disclosure, there's buyback, and the money is coming from the government currently, theoretically, as a policy, says that would be legal. They don't go out and monitor these companies to see if any of them do that. Right. That's, you know, so a person should not assume that when they get into a company, it is legal by definition. No, because arbitrarily, occasionally, The FTC prosecutes these schemes. Oh, my God, they discover, oh, most of that money isn't coming from retail sales. Nobody's making money, and nobody really understood what the heck they signed when they got into it.
Now, Roberta, you were a LuLaRoe distributor. For those who may be wondering if they're in MLM, are there certain signs you think they should be looking for?
You know, there definitely are a lot of red flags that you're going to experience when you join these companies. Somebody that's telling you that you're about to own your own business for a very small amount of money, it's usually a pretty big red flag. The emphasis on the sisterhood, the emphasis on the community, the emphasis that it's about this business opportunity and not the actual product. Those are going to be really big red flags that you should look for when deciding whether or not to join these businesses.
Now, Josie, you were in the top 1% of 3 MLMs. Explain exactly what that means.
So I was a six-figure earner in multi-level marketing, and I joined when I was a hairstylist. And 16 months later, I was able to quit my job and do MLM full-time from home, something that I never thought about when joining. Like Robert said, you need to look at all the hallmarks of what makes something a pyramid scheme and multi-level marketing. I didn't even understand really what MLM was. In my head, I was just, oh, it's legal. Okay, yay, I could make a sale. And I really liked the product because a lot of the products aren't bad products. You know, they're good, just like other non-MLM products. And that's what gets people in a lot of the times. And then the sisterhood and everything else, it kind of goes from there. So I just started just to join, and it kind of took off. In the beginning, it wasn't about recruitment, or I didn't want to recruit, you know. I just needed a little bit of money to help me pay off some medical debt.
Now, we dug through some financial disclosure statements for some of the biggest MLMs. For hair care company Monate, 92% of the sales force made an average of $161 of annual earnings in 2020. In Mary Kay's 2019 Canadian income disclosure, 83% of their sales force earned nothing for the year. And in Amway's 2020 financial disclosure, 37% of all independent business owners reported no sales. Robert, how typical are these numbers for MLMs?
Well, they're almost universal. I've looked at hundreds, literally hundreds of MLMs, testified in cases of court cases of over 30 of them. And there's a big lie going on here, a lie so colossal people can hardly imagine it to be true, which is virtually nobody actually makes real income. Even those figures you gave are gross revenue, not income, not net income. They don't include expenses. They are a one-year snapshot, but these schemes are churning thousands and thousands of people every year. The only real question to ask a company would be, how many people have ever joined this business, so-called, and how many of them in total ever made a net profit? My experience is that it's far, far less than 1%.
And even the FTC says most people who join legitimate MLMs make little or no money. We're discussing the MLM industry in the new Amazon docuseries, LuLaRich. We'll continue our conversation after the break. And remember to have your questions answered on future topics, or just to let us know what you think, tweet us at 1A.
Support for NPR and the following message come from BetterHelp, offering online counseling. BetterHelp therapist Hesu Jo knows that lockdown has been hard on us as humans.
We as people are hardwired to connect with others, which is why this whole time is so difficult. The connection that happens between people can be very powerful, and how healing it can be to have a healthy relationship with someone.
To get matched with a counselor within 48 hours and save 10%, go to betterhelp.com/1A. This message comes from Capital One. With the Capital One Venture Card, you earn unlimited double miles on every purchase every day. And you can use those miles toward travel expenses like flights, hotels, rental cars, and more. Just book and pay for your travel using your Venture Card and redeem your miles toward the cost. Capital One. What's in your wallet? Credit approval required. Capital One Bank, USANA.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
We're discussing the new Amazon docuseries, LuLaRich, which digs into the multi-level marketing company, LuLaRoe, and what it tells us about the MLM industry today. Roberta, you're in Amazon's LuLaRich documentary. What drew you to the company? How did you get involved?
You know, I was a young mom. I was desperate. I felt isolated. I needed community. I needed friendship. And I needed to make some money. I wanted to be home with my daughter. And LuLaRoe, you know, it looked like LuLaRoe answered all of those questions and all of that desperation. And it seemed to be the answer to everything I had been looking for.
Josie, you were in, again, that 1% of three MLMs, meaning you were one of the few people actually making money in the business. Why did you stay in the industry for so long?
So when you start in an MLM company, you are immediately flooded with so much information. You are told to read everything that they have in their online office on the company's website. Then your upline, the person you join under or your sponsor, is putting you in lots of training groups to learn the product, to learn how to make money in the company, to learn the history of the company. And then you're also told to read all these self-help books that promote network marketing and multi-level marketing, which is the same thing, as being not great, but not perfect, but great, and a better way than having a regular job. And they like to say job stands for just over broke. So you're indoctrinated not just to believe that this company is amazing and will be there for everything in your life, but that the industry in itself is a better way. And it's a better way to have financial freedom for your family. So when I started seeing things happen in my first company that I wasn't fond of, like behavior by the CEO that I thought was not great. I left because I thought, okay, you know, it's just this company. I'm going to find another company that matches my values and beliefs, that takes care of its distributors. And by my third and final company, I realized, oh, this is the entire industry. It's not just one company. This is how the entire industry acts. And there's so much toxic positivity that goes on in the industry, which is toxic positivity is the belief that no matter how bad a situation or no matter how difficult, you must always have a positive mindset. And this kind of like stems down to like victim blaming, because then if anything's not going well in your business, if you're not making money, if you're losing money, you're told, well, that's not the company's fault. That's not your upline's fault. That's on you. And you need to figure it out. So you're always thinking, it's my fault.
Yeah. So how much, since you were making a good chunk of money in these companies, how much were you making from sales and how much were you making from recruiting people?
So my first company was the company I made the most in, and I was in it for 3.5 years. And then when I left, I had to start over from zero again and work up. And I mean, you get to a point where you're making thousands a week, and then your sales amount is only like a few hundred.
So then the rest of the money was coming in via recruiting?
Correct. It's coming off of the bonuses you receive from the company that's given to you off the people below you and below them and so on.
So how, now in retrospect, how do you reconcile that piece of it for yourself, that you were recruiting people into something that you now recognize as being toxic?
I have a lot of guilt and shame I still struggle with today because at the time I thought I was helping women. I thought that I had a better opportunity that I wanted to provide a lot of women with. And I remember, you know, when you ask your upline things like, okay, how do I get my girls to succeed? How do I get them to make more money like I am? You're told, well, they just need to read more self-help or they need to spend more hours in their business. And when it comes down to like, okay, they've done all those things. I've worked with them. How can we get them to make more money? Because it's still not coming in. You're told, oh, well, they must be lying, you know? And it wasn't until things started happening where I started getting gaslit, I started realizing, wait, something's wrong here. Like what they tell you that anyone can succeed in this if you just believe and work hard, it's not true. And I realized later after getting out that it had nothing to do with my drive or my ambition or my attitude and everything to do with the size of my network.
And I just want to give some context here for people who are unfamiliar. When we talk about upline and downline, we're talking about people you report up to, people who recruited you into the business, and your downline are people who you brought in yourself. Roberta, but the same question for you, because you brought people in as well under you. How do you reconcile that now?
You know, I had a really hard time. When I figured out what it was and what I had been a part of, I had a really, really hard time. I took some time off. I did some soul searching. I realized that I had been not only a victim of this company, but also a perpetrator. And that's something that we say a lot in the anti-MLM community. It's really important to understand that you are both of these things in these businesses and to give yourself a little bit of break and understand that it's systemic. So what I did, I started reaching out to other victims. I started sharing my story. And I think in sharing my story, I helped a lot of other people feel comfortable in sharing theirs.
Well, one thing that Lula Rich, the Amazon documentary, talks about is who they targeted to recruit into the company. And here's co-founder Mark Stidham talking about why moms make great sellers.
If you want to create an incredible wealth, identify an underutilized resource. And you know what? There is an underutilized resource of stay-at-home moms. And they have chosen to be a mother. And if you make that choice, you pay a price career-wise in our country right now. We have a lot of people of faith that have been attracted to this business. Here we've got this army of women who are smart, passionate, beautiful, funny, educated, and want to do things.
You're awesome.
And we want to give them here. Express all of that. Take your creativity, your passion, your excitement for life, and here's a place that is a pure meritocracy. Show up, do it.
Now, in one AARP study, they found 60% of MLM participants were female. Josie, why do you think women and especially moms are targeted for MLMs?
You know, there's a lot of feminist lingo that MLMs love to use, and they love to claim that they're empowering women who still don't earn as much as men in this day and age, unfortunately. And so they tell you, like, you can be a girl boss, you can be your own business owner, you can have it all. And, you know, I think that really says something to women. And you're also told you can also offer this opportunity to other people in your life. And that speaks to somebody's ideology, because you want to help others succeed. At least most people do. I believe that most people who get in these MLM companies have good intentions. They don't know everything they're signing up for, like I did in the beginning. And they really think that, okay, if I can help myself, I can help others. And that's exciting. And then the community aspect as well, because we're in such an online world now where we think we're connected, but we're really not.
We got this email from Courtney who says, can any of your guests talk about how MLM companies target military spouses? As a former military spouse, I saw these MLMs all over bases and posts and went to a few parties for the products. Robert, anything you can share?
Well, yes, certainly. Through Pyramid Scheme Alert, I do hear from people all over the world. And I did see and recognize this some time ago that military spouses had become a target. I guess this is, again, driven by economic need, loneliness, multiple deployments, and they become quite vulnerable for the reasons that have been given here: isolation, economic need, wanting to contribute, wanting to make use of talents, and MLM comes along. And that's it, really, the vulnerability is the common feature that you see: psychological, economic, social vulnerability involving isolation or, you know, inability to really fulfill a life's potential. And MLM claims to offer the opportunity to fulfill all these things, to answer all these problems. That's part of the big lie that MLM offers. So military spouses have become immigrants, have stay-at-home mothers, blue collar. I mean, you name it. They have found the weak spots in our society, which keeps increasing as the middle class suffers, you know, setbacks. MLM's market keeps growing.
Well, we did hear from some people who say they've had a good experience working with an MLM.
Hey, this is Jared from Maple Grove calling. I would say that MLM has definitely changed my life for the better. It has been a great second source of income for me for over a decade now. And so I am all about the right MLMs. There are definitely some charlatans out there, like any brand of business or branch of business. So you have to do your research.
Hi, my name's Julie. I'm from Sarasota, Florida. I'm a partner with the Juice Plus company. The network marketing industry is better than traditional. It may not be perfect, but it is better. There are excellent companies out there. You should not have to invest much. There should be incredible support. That's what we get with this company. And if people do their due diligence, they'll be able to find one that they can feel comfortable with.
Jarrett, Julie, thanks for those messages. And we should say we heard from a good number of people who said they found a good MLM, and saying, you know, people need to do their research and not all MLMs are the same. Robert, while we understand this is not an industry that's being watched very closely, is it possible to have an ethical MLM?
No, it's not. I mean, the model itself is inherently deceptive and inherently harmful. If your income proposition is dependent on recruiting other people, those other people's income proposition depends on recruiting other people. That's an unsustainable, impossible model. It will always place the vast majority in the bottom, where they cannot make money. So there is a built-in lie to the proposition itself. It will result, and statistically we know this, in the vast majority of them suffering financial harm. So the solicitation itself is really an invitation to be harmed. And that's the consequence that plays out too. I don't see how anybody could define that as ethical.
Are there any MLMs that follow that rule of the majority of your money coming from sales rather than recruitment?
Again, in the 21st century, does it really make sense that someone could make a sustainable living selling commodity products by themselves, on their own, from their house? I mean, just on its face, you can see that it really is not a model that would be that could support many people, if any.
We're discussing the new Amazon docuseries, LuLaRich. It digs into the multi-level marketing company LuLaRoe and what it tells us about the MLM industry today. A reminder that you can join future conversations. Just download our 1A Vox Pop app and leave us a voicemail. We'll be back with more from you and our guests in a moment.
This message comes from NPR sponsor Samsung with the Samsung Galaxy Z Flip 3 5G. Enjoy the freedom to capture from any angle with Flex Mode. Make hands-free video calls and take photos by simply unfolding your Galaxy Z Flip 3 5G. Choose what you want to capture, set it down, stand back, and shoot your best shot. And with Flex Mode, play back your next viral video on the top screen while your bottom screen gives you pro editing control. 5G connection and availability may vary. Check with carrier.
Over this last year and a half, the world's been through a lot. So on this season of the StoryCorps podcast, we'll hear stories reminding us that even when times are hard, we can still begin again. Listen to our new season wherever you get your podcasts.
Now let's continue our conversation on the new Amazon documentary, LuLaRich and the MLM Industry. Robert, why is there so little regulation of MLMs?
In a nutshell, it's political lobbying, corruption that dates back to the 70s and 80s. MLM has a huge lobby on K Street and a caucus in Congress and a big propaganda machine. That's pretty much the explanation for how they have suppressed any efforts at regulation.
When it comes to lawsuits, and in the documentary we referred to, LuLaRoe was taken to court by the state of Washington. In February of this year, the company settled and paid over $4 million to resolve the lawsuit. How often are MLMs taken to court?
Rarely, almost never. When you look at the scale of this, about 1 in 7 households in the United States affected, the losses of $30 billion or more a year. It's inconsequential, insignificant at all what the government is doing. The government is actually, particularly FTC, has become complicit in this by calling MLM legitimate without ever monitoring it or determining what are the foundations. Consumers are grossly misled here and are lost, and that's how so many are falling victim to it.
Josie, as someone like Roberta who recruited people into these businesses, how were you trained to talk to people about why they should join a company?
So there's something called forming, and it's FORM, it's an acronym, and it stands for Family, Occupation, Recreation, message. And this is a way that we were trained to recruit others. And what you're supposed to do is, it's not all supposed to be done in one day. It's supposed to take some time. And you are supposed to form a new person that you, like, say, friend request on social media, and you're supposed to reach out to them and ask them questions about their family. And, you know, how many kids do you have? Tell me about your husband. How'd you guys meet? And then later on, you're supposed to reach back out and ask them about their occupation. What do you do for a job? What does your spouse do for a job? How long have you been there? Do you like it? Then you're supposed to eventually reach back out and ask them about recreational activities. So what their hobbies are, what do you like to do for fun? What does your family like to do? What do you wish you could do more of in the future? And then once they've opened up to you and they've warmed up to you, that's when you're supposed to go in for the kill with the message. And you're supposed to message them and say, I have an opportunity that, based on everything you've told me about your family, your job, your hobbies, I think this business opportunity could be perfect for you. It's predatory.
Roberta, you were shaking your head as Josie was talking. Does this sound familiar?
Absolutely. Yeah. Every MLM has a different kind of tactic. The forming is just one. I've seen so many different ones. In LuLaRoe, it was called 72 to Cruise, and you would set a timer for 5 minutes and write down as many names as you possibly could. And even if you didn't know the person's name, you could literally write Starbucks barista who makes my coffee if you didn't know their name. And then you were to reach out to them and try to get them to book a pop-up with you. It was incredibly predatory and scammy, and I never, ever did it because it made me feel gross.
Robert, explain a little bit more about the psychological side of MLMs. And it seems like it's become deeply rooted in the business model. How did that happen?
Yes, historically, and Ponzinomics is an attempt to trace where MLM came from, how it became what it is today, and so on. And this has really never been explored. And it's not taught in schools. It just doesn't show up in the media at all. But historically, MLM is, first of all, a Ponzi scheme. It's a pyramid scheme. It's going to result in loss for the great number of people that join, vast number of people. So it cannot be straightforward in its solicitation. So it developed these diversionary, dominating, deceptive tactics from the start to enroll people, to separate them from looking directly at the pyramid element of it. And then it evolved into a belief system, a kind of pseudo-economics, that a pyramid scheme can be a sustainable economic model. And then that you can shape reality with your beliefs only. You don't need facts. So you are lured into a non-rational world, a fictional world in which you are a super person who can make anything happen with your beliefs. If you fail, it's only because you didn't believe enough. And of course, what are you doing? You're trying to make something that cannot work, an unsustainable pyramid scheme, to work. So this is all needed. They have to dominate you, separate you from critical thinking, separate you from doubters or friends or relatives and so on who might, caution you and urge you to look at this a bit more rationally.
Kathy posted on Facebook, I had a friend who sells essential oils. She told me she could increase my immune system with them, and she also had a money-making opportunity for me. And by the way, I have two very serious autoimmune disorders and take two medications to suppress my immune system. There's another moment in the documentary that highlights the type of women who were in LuLaRoe.
I was invited. I did turn down the cruise. Being on a boat with a whole bunch of white people like that, just not my thing. I'm so sorry. I just had to say it. I love white people to death. Just being on a boat in the middle of nowhere, and it wasn't only but a handful of us, if you know what I mean. I'll just pass. I'll see y'all when y'all get back. But thank you for the invite.
Josie, in your experience, how white are these companies?
Very white. I definitely stood out. But there are also companies who target minorities. You know, you have Herbalife, who has a very large Hispanic community in their organization.
You know, Roberta, we see in the documentary how much social media plays into the business model. Right now, MLM content is banned from TikTok, and there seems to be an anti-MLM movement taking place on platforms like YouTube and TikTok. On Reddit, the anti-MLM subreddit has reached over 700,000 members. What's your sense of where this stands right now? Do you think the tide is turning?
You know, I've been doing this for 4 years, and I've definitely seen a really big shift. I was really excited last December when I heard that TikTok had taken MLMs off their platform, because TikTok is one of the platforms that I use the most. And unfortunately, it's just not true. There's MLMs. It is rife. It is really sad. I deal with all kinds of people that are being victimized by top content creators on TikTok, like every single day, being promised things. And then obviously it never coming to fruition. We report these videos on TikTok. We say, hey, these are frauds and scams. It's literally in your policies and procedures and your terms of service. And every single report I've ever done has come back as this doesn't violate. But I'm constantly taken down for bullying on things that aren't bullying and have been fair gamed, not only by the LuLaRoe consultants, but by other MLM consultants as well, because they don't want to hear my message. And they think that getting me taken down is the best way.
Robert, from a policy perspective, what would you like to see happen?
I'd like to see the Department of Justice get involved in looking at this as a racket posing as a business. And I would like to see the FTC begin an industry-wide investigation of this whole phenomenon of multi-level marketing.
That's Robert L. Fitzpatrick, the author of Ponzinomics, The Untold Story of Multi-Level Marketing. Also with us, Roberta Blevins, the host of the Life After MLM podcast, and Josie Nikoy, the creator of the Not the Good Girl YouTube channel. Thanks to you all. Today's producer was Michelle Harvin. Our podcast is produced by Barb Anguiano. This program comes to you from WAMU, part of American University in Washington, distributed by NPR. I'm Jen Moyt. This is 1A.